This is A Wild Conversation.
Hi, my name is Callum Hughes. I'm a zookeeper here at the Greater Vancouver Zoo.
And I'm Ashley Wysick, also a zookeeper here at the Greater Vancouver Zoo.
And today on A Wild Conversation, we're going to be talking about sustainable harvest.
Yep.
It's a pretty interesting field because when we talk about species that are harvested for consumption or otherwise use, you would think it's a bad thing for the conservation of the species, right?
Yeah, generally speaking.
Like, yeah, it's definitely it seems like a bad thing you're taking, but when it's sustainably done,
yeah,
you actually have a situation where you're more likely to get investments into protecting that species and lots of funding for research and monitoring to make sure that species continues to exist for generations to enjoy and harvest.
It's the same thing with habitat and plant life and stuff like that too, right?
Mm.
You still need to harvest trees and stuff like that, but if we do it sustainably, then, you know, it's good. I don't know.
Exactly. And one species I definitely want to focus on because it's full right now.
Okay.
Is salmon. I definitely want to focus on
Okay, I thought this
salmon.
Was going to be some kind of a pun, and I, like, prepared myself.
No. I have always wanted to see the Pacific salmon runs.
Okay.
Because there are multiple species here back where I'm from. There's just the Atlantic salmon.
Okay.
And I think there aren't that many of them at all.
Oh.
I don't know the fishing regulations, but I think you have to go to Scotland or Wales to do it.
To be completely honest, like, I mean, we already know that I'm not super into fish. I didn't even know Atlantic salmon was a type of salmon.
Really?
Well, I've heard of coho, and I've heard of Chinook, and I've heard of pink. I just never heard of Atlantic salmon.
You're very nationalistic your species choices.
Yeah. I mean, I just didn't study fish. It wasn't that interesting, okay?
Oh, well, get ready, because salmon are awesome.
Salmon are awesome.
Yes.
Yes. There was an episode about salmon in Magic School Bus, so yes.
Okay, cool. I think I remember that one.
Yeah, exactly.
So here you have, like you said, the coho, you have the pinks, you have the Chinook.
We got steelheads.
Steelheads.
Chum.
Yep.
Gosh.
Quite a few species.
Yeah.
Sockeye as well.
There we go. Yeah, there's a lot. Just trying to pull them all out of the recesses of my brain.
Hey, Ashley.
Oh, God.
If we were salmon, do you know what kind of salmon we would be?
Just tell me.
Co-host salmon.
Oh, my gosh. I thought you were going to say something about being chummy.
You know, there are probably a lot of fish biologists or fishermen right now cracking up because I made a coho salmon pun.
I'm going to cry.
Sorry, I couldn't resist. But what I think is so, so cool about the salmon run here is it's so heavily monitored.
Yeah.
And you are able to fish for salmon here, provided you purchase a license to do so. You also have to purchase the appropriate stamps for the species you're going for, and you have to follow the rules and regulations to do so.
I might be wrong about this, but isn't it with, like, pink salmon, they actually only open their season every 2 years?
I think they only come up the rivers every 2 years.
Oh, they only come up. See, I don't know. I don't know anything about fish.
Definitely true. There's an open and a closing season.
Yeah.
So you can only fish from July, I think late July, onwards to November or December.
And for certain species, you can only harvest the ones that actually were raised in runs.
Isn't that true? Yes.
Yeah.
So that's coho salmon.
Okay.
You can only take hatchery-raised coho. You're only allowed a maximum of 4 fish in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to identify a hatchery-raised one from a wild one is they remove the adipose fin, which is like a fin on the back, close to the tail of the fish. It's after the dorsal fin, close to the tail fin. There should be one fin in between there, but they remove it.
So you can identify easily.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's a good way of doing things, because then the wild natural population has the ability to thrive with their own genetics, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It takes pressure off the population, the wild population, and also the hatchery population continues to contribute because a lot of the hatchery-raised individuals will still get past the fishermen.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
A few weeks ago, actually, we went up to one of the hatcheries out here in the Fraser Valley, and with my boyfriend, and he was in love, you know, running around. I thought it was really cool. It was very interesting seeing them because they'll actually come right back to the hatchery because that's where they were raised, right?
Yeah.
It's really cool to see.
Oh, and they're so beautiful. The way they change color as they're going up the river.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a story about how salmon traveled up the river until they reached the top of a mountain and became the Northern Lights.
They just kept right on going.
Kept right on going. And then as they kept going, their silvers turned to greens and reds like they, some species do.
Oh, that's really cool.
And then they became the Northern Lights itself.
I like that story. That's cool.
Right? I like that too. But what's super cool as well is you're allowed a limited number of fish. They take into account the species and how well they're doing. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in the Vedder River, I know you're not allowed to take any sockeye. Because right now they want the sockeye populations to recover, or there isn't enough coming in for this season.
Makes sense.
Not allowed to take any chum salmon. You can take a maximum of 10 Chinook salmon over 62 centimeters in the waterway that I've been fishing, the Vedder River.
Okay. Maximum 10 this season?
Yeah. Maximum 10 for the whole year.
For the whole year. Okay.
So that's pretty good. And what's really cool too is it's that maximum 10 is the fish over 62 centimeters in that waterway. In other waterways, it's over 50 centimeters.
Mm.
So they take into account the how well that fishery is doing, but also size. And why that's so, so cool, right, for me, is like it's a recent discovery with fish is that we often think, okay, we'll take the big ones because they've reached adulthood, right? It's fair. We let the young, smaller ones go and we keep the bigger ones. Problem with that is that fish are eaten by more predators when they're smaller. And as mm-hmm. they get bigger, they have less and less predators.
Okay.
But when they reach a certain size, suddenly they're focused on by us. They get a new predator, but lots of that species. It means that we put pressure on them in a time when they're not supposed to have that much pressure.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
It's kind of like for some reptiles, like a crocodile, when it's a baby, is eaten by practically everything. But when it's an adult, nothing eats it. So
yeah.
It has a pretty mellow life.
Apex predator.
Exactly.
You got to upgrade to that status.
Yeah. But if suddenly it's eaten by something that represents 10 or let's just say a few million individuals, it becomes a pretty bad time to be an adult.
Yeah.
So they've taken that into account. And not only that, bigger fish have more reproductive output. They're mm-hmm. able to produce more eggs. They also have higher fat reserves, so they are more likely and stronger. They're more likely to reach the spawning site. And also, you might inadvertently be selecting for smaller fish by constantly eating the bigger ones. So,
haven't they found that they've kind of accidentally done that in the wild with certain types of deer and sheep? And, you know, because bighorn sheep, they would... Hunters historically would go for the big, more impressive ones, and over the years we found that they're not as big as impressive as they used to be because the only males left were the ones that were a little bit less impressive.
Exactly, so true. They sometimes they have less because they were targeted for their antlers, for example. So mm-hmm. smaller antlered individuals.
So technically, in the wild, if you had smaller antlers, you had more success because we weren't looking at you.
Exactly.
Interesting to think about.
It is. And it's just super cool that this is taken into account for these fish. And to make it even cooler, they do it by a region by region. So you might be able to keep a certain number of fish in certain waterways, but in a different waterway, a smaller number or a larger number. So for example, if you are up by Whistler, I think, you're only allowed to keep one coho. Hatchery-raised salmon, as opposed to four in the Vedder River.
Wow, interesting.
Right? Which means that they've taken into account that that fishery probably isn't doing as strong as the one at Vedder River.
Yeah, so they want to keep more of their stock, if possible.
Yeah. So they take into account local population sizes, not just the whole population in the whole country.
Interesting.
Super cool.
No, that's really, really cool, because then you don't know what would happen. You might have one hatchery that's doing super, super, super well, and you might have another hatchery that's like, we got no fish this year.
Yeah.
And you don't want that.
Yeah. And you said it yourself, they return to the same spot.
They do.
So if you're not careful, you could wipe out a population in a river and it doesn't get repopulated without some serious intervention. And what's really cool too is if you are a fisherman or a hunter, you often have to buy tags or buy licenses in order to do so. And that money goes to supporting the conservation research, for example, of those species. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you buy a fishing license here in BC, the money goes to the habitat, some of the money goes to the Habitat Conservation Trust Foundation or the Freshwater Fisheries Society of BC.
Well, and it makes sense because if these people, you know, are really interested in hunting and fishing and getting, they don't want them to go extinct.
Exactly.
They want them to be around.
Yeah.
And so they also want their habitats to be intact.
Mm.
It's very cool to think about.
And it's not just if you are a vegetarian or a vegan, you might not think this applies to you. It also applies to other things such as berry picking or mushroom picking, for example.
Oh, does it?
Yep.
Huh.
For example, huckleberries.
Oh, I love huckleberries.
Are notorious for being hard to grow. In fact, I think you can mostly harvest them from the wild.
Yeah, I think when I was little, we used to eat huckleberries, and we only ever just would go down the trails and kind of snack on them as we were walking. I don't remember ever going to a huckleberry bush that wasn't like way out in the forest.
Exactly.
Huh.
So in certain areas, they actually have an open and closing season for it.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And do you know why?
Bears?
Exactly. That's it. Perfect.
Yeah.
Like
putting me on the spot, man.
Sorry. I do that. But you respond very well.
Okay.
But yeah, for grizzly bears, it's super important. We often think of the salmon run as being the way that they get fat, their last big feed before winter, for example.
You know, it is really interesting, though, because we have grizzly bears here at the zoo. And sometimes when I'm feeding them, people will literally be like, why are you feeding them fruits and veggies? Bears eat salmon. It's like, well, actually, it depends on the season. It depends on what's going on. They actually eat a whole variety of things. It's surprising how many people don't quite know that. But I think it's because that image of the grizzly bear standing in the waterfall, grabbing the salmon in the air as it jumps is just such a huge monumental photo that we just assume that that's what's happening all year long.
Yeah.
You know?
It probably doesn't have the same effect.
To see a bear just like in a bush, like, yum.
Yeah,
yum.
Exactly. This vicious predator devouring berries.
Yeah.
Carefully manipulating the berries with his paw is a very dangerous predator, but it's not the same effect as when it grabs a fish out of midair and
so
crunches
true.
Down.
Well, and it's interesting because throughout the entire year, you know, their diet will shift and change and they'll concentrate more on roots and greens and then they shift to kind of nuts and berries and shift over to meat. And we actually try to mimic that as closely as possible here as well. So you'll notice at different seasons that we're feeding different types of food, which is very cool.
That's pretty good. Know, imagine right? if they did that for people. We'd just right? be fed pumpkin spice lattes all the season if they took it just the fall. And here's your muffin. Please give me a vegetable.
just one carrot. Just,
please.
That's actually one of the things when I first started as a zookeeper here that I didn't know that we even took into consideration that I thought was really cool when I first started.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't know. Fun fact.
And what's also cool about sustainable harvest is it takes into account making sure that you have to follow the rules as mm-hmm. well. There are rules attached to it. So, for example, if you're fishing for salmon, no barbed hooks. Reason being is a barb can do damage to a fish. If you decide to let it go after you've caught it, a barb mm-hmm. can do more damage. It's also not really fair for the fish, and you want to give the fish the best chance.
Mm-hmm.
No fishing at night, because that generally is a time when fish are migrating up the river. So it has to be during daylight hours, for example.
Huh, I did not know that.
Yep.
I always think of people when they fish, they get up at like, as the sun is rising, but I didn't even consider the idea of night fishing.
Yeah, some people do that, and there are places where you can legally do it for certain species, but for salmon, when they're migrating up the river...
Not allowed.
Not allowed.
Interesting.
And another really cool thing that fishermen do is they are really useful for collecting data. So a lot of research is being done for salmon, for example. We're checking out how their survivorship is, where they migrate, what they do, where they hang out, for example, so we can better protect the species.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have trackers on them. And when anglers catch them, they're asked and requested to make sure that they take a picture, record the data, the information of the fish, and send that off to the researchers. So that way they can actually monitor where the fish are going, where they've been caught. If the fishermen decided, for example, to let the fish go, which I've been told is completely up to the fishermen's discretion, they could either return the tags and take the fish, or they could let it go so they can collect more data. But the fact that the fish has a tag is not supposed to affect your decision making, which is like the worst thing for data. You need no bias, and that is so difficult to get.
Yeah. Definitely can be.
The other thing is, too, it's really good for monitoring for invasive species. So, for example, they've actually found some Atlantic salmon that have escaped from certain places in the rivers here. So fishermen are a good resource, a good source of intelligence if they catch an Atlantic salmon. Best way to ID them is they've got spots on their gills, or not on their gills, on their gill plate, right where the gill flap is. They've got spots on that. Big scales, and I think a different number of rays on their fin, back fin. So definitely something to keep an eye out, because the last thing you want is competition with the native species here.
Interesting.
I also learned that here in BC, after a forest fire, some mushrooms actually grow quite well in that environment.
Some plants also reproduce by fire.
Yeah.
I think it's lodgepole pine? That their pine cones actually reproduce in fire, pretty much. Yeah, which is a lot of our forests were lodgepole pine.
Something that it is like a natural part.
Yeah.
But with any form of sustainable harvest, it's important to make sure that you do your research as well. Mushrooms especially, because there are some toxic ones.
One of the craziest things from university I learned was that we barely know anything about mushrooms.
I mean, right? You can. There's quite
a bit we know, but I think they're discovering new species at such an alarming rate. Mm. You know, like there's so much we don't know about fungi. I just don't mess with it. I buy my mushrooms at the grocery store.
Yeah. I mean, it's a typical trope in a show where someone accidentally eats the wrong mushroom and hallucinates.
Yeah.
But there are some mushrooms that will just straight up destroy your kidneys or liver, and that's not as funny. I know.
We learned about some of those in school, and it terrified me.
Yeah.
Just so. Dang. Okay.
Do your research. Remember not to harvest anything from national parks, private land. You need permission from the landowner. That's really important. And if you have any questions or anything that you do not know, contact your local wildlife and fisheries, and they often provide numbers that you can call. So, for example, this year, before I got my fishing license and went out, I made sure to call and confirm everything that I'd learned online that they update for each year. That way I knew I wasn't accidentally breaking a law or accidentally becoming, ironically, a poacher.
Yeah, or harming a species or ecosystem without meaning to, right?
Yeah, or wrecking a good system. Like the fact that there's so much research, so much attention is given not just to the species in general, but their local populations, the size of the fish, and how people are interacting with them. It's just amazing. Mm-hmm. And hey, if you aren't interested in fishing, for example, hunting or sustainable harvest, you can still donate money. Check out www.gofish.bc.com. So if you still think, yes, salmon are great, but I'd never go fishing for them, there you could help support the species in the wild too, just as fishermen do.
There's options for everyone.
Exactly.
There's options for me, because I don't know. I don't think I could sit still that long. It's not my deal.
And what's really cool too is that it's a good way to get people in touch, you know, connected with our natural environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going out there, it's not just about catching the fish. It's about seeing the wildlife.
It's real purdy.
Exactly. I mean, I went out, I've seen beaver, I've seen raccoons, eagles, lots of seagulls, seeing the salmon. Migrating past you and not taking your line is frustrating, but also very beautiful and just something I've always wanted to see.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I think it's definitely important that we note the importance that hunters, gatherers, and fishermen have towards conservation, especially when it is a well-monitored researched field done by our Wildlife and Fisheries Service.
When it's a system that works.
Exactly. If anyone has any questions for us, do not hesitate to contact us at podcast@gvzoo.com or DM us on our social media. I'm Callum Hughes.
And I'm Ashley Wysick.
And this has been
A Wild Conversation.